They do, so...
Deb will know from some of the ones that we've released before, they've jumped out of the box and just gone straight into the first tussock and they're gone. You can't even see them. They disappear literally in front of your eyes. And then once they're right, they'll come out and start foraging around and they'll quickly know to probably move out of somebody else's area, especially if there's some larger animals on site. But no, they'll just have to be pushed around and find their own habitat and start building their own nest. You've just been able to witness one of maybe about 450 animals. It's pretty special when you get to see something like that. It's very rare. It's very privileged. Just even seeing the diggings on the ground is still exciting for myself. So to see a real animal, it's pretty cool stuff.
A group of people are standing huddled around some small boxes. They're expecting to get a glimpse of something very rare indeed. And so are we, here this week on Off Track on RN. I'm Ann Jones, and two science stories from the outdoors on today's show, both about things you might never have seen. First up, VIBs, that is, very important bandicoots. These are eastern barred bandicoots, about the size of a smallish rabbit, with a long snout tipped with a nose that can move quite independently. On its rump are three white stripes, and that's where it gets its name. Sarah Phillips, the ABC Environment online editor, joined members of the Eastern Barred Bandicoot Recovery Team, as well as some local school kids, to release four bandicoots into an area within a predator-proof fence.
My name is Travis Shigetano and I work for Conservation Volunteers and I'm part of the Eastern Barred Bandicoot recovery process. We've got something very exciting on this evening, which is releasing more Eastern Barred Bandicoots. So through the zoo's breeding process here at Zoos Victoria, we get supplied some fresh bandicoots, which we can put onto our site to bolster our numbers and keep genetic diversity going.
Now, what's an Eastern Barred Bandicoot, if I didn't know?
Well, a lot of people don't know. It's about half the size of a rabbit, about 30 centimetres long, little snout, little tail, little stripes across its back, which gives it that name, Eastern Barred. Likes to live in the grasses, hidden away all day, fully nocturnal, so unfortunately most people have no idea what it looks like or where they'd find them. Well, unfortunately, this being a Victorian species predominantly, there's only about 400 or so, and they're not in the wild anymore. Unfortunately, they are fully extinct in the wild. So they do survive on these areas where we protected them from foxes, cats and dogs. And it's the only way that they can survive these days.
What happened? Why did they all disappear from the mainland?
Well, unfortunately, when you've only got 0.5% of native grasslands left in Victoria, they've just lost all their habitat. It's like I say to people from Melbourne when they come out to visit, if everybody went to work for one day in the city and there was only one building left and 4 million people tried to fit in, it isn't going to work. So they lost out from competition, so they've lost all their homes and habitat. And then, of course, once the fox was introduced, it's just too cunning and too smart and started to wipe them out from that angle as well. We figure out that there's about one animal per hectare, so there would have been thousands and thousands and thousands naturally roaming around once upon a time, naturally competing with other native species, of course.
The grassland that they live on, or used to live on, what's that like?
Well, basically, it's fairly high and dense, so we're talking around your knee height, very thick tussock grass. And with those tussocks, they can actually form little runways that are naturally there. So the bandicoot will scrape away a little bit of dirt on the ground, build a shallow sort of nest, and then bring in other material. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not something that people are common with. People see grasses and they want to see it mowed.
Yeah, right. So the kind of grasses that you're talking about is that sort of fluffy native Australian grasses that we see suddenly being trendy in houses again now?
Yeah, definitely. It's for somebody like myself, I think the drought was a wonderful thing because it educated the public on other ways that they can garden. So all those nice sedges and borders and everything, it's great for us to see that sort of exposure for the grasslands because that's the key to the animal's success. Without the grassland habitat, they can't survive.
And you say they make little houses. What are they like?
Well, they're basically like a bird's nest, really, but upside down and on the ground. It's a shallow little dig into the soil. They pull the grass over. They'll bring in other grass material, maybe some sticks and some leaves, and that's it. You can't find them. No way. Unless you accidentally stand on one, you ain't going to find it.
I'm ready.
Everyone ready?
Head out that way.
So glad you
just slide. Yeah, just slowly slide it up, and then but wait till the cameraman say go.
What's happening?
I'm ready.
I'm releasing I don't know how many bandicoots.
One.
Have you opened the door?
Yeah.
Where's the bandicoot?
I don't know.
The animals were brought in from the wild when the numbers got to very, very dangerous low levels into Zoos Victoria's breeding program. So for over 25 years, they've been breeding this animal up and basically keeping it alive until we have sites like this where we can put them out into the wild. So Zoos Victoria have done an amazing project over all that time.
And are they good breeders, these little guys?
Yeah, definitely. You can give them lots of different names, but they do like to breed and they like to make baby bandicoots.
My name is Phoebe Allen and I'm a zookeeper at Werribee Open Range Zoo.
How does one breed a bandicoot?
Pretty much, these guys are breeding machines. They actually have one of the shortest gestation periods of any mammal at 12 and a half days. So theoretically, they should be doing really well for themselves, and breeding them doesn't tend to be so much the issue. Unfortunately, our populations are being completely decimated of our small marsupials like the bandicoot due to animals like feral cats and foxes. So we like to think that they sort of do their own thing with the breeding. We do match up the best genetic pairs, but then most of the time they kind of get to it themselves, which is great.
So what kind of environment do you have set up for them at Werribee?
We actually have breeding pens, so we can match up individuals, and we also have our individual pens, so depending on what their stage is, whether they're currently breeding, we can house them separately, or we can open a slide in between and have males and females together, which is really nice. And we're also currently investigating what's called a mate choice trial, so we're basically giving the female the option of males, so she gets the choice of two separate males that have been matched to her genetically, and she'll actually investigate their smells, and we're hoping to see more positive responses from one than the other, and we're actually going to match those bandicoots together and hope that it increases our breeding success.
So you open a little sliding door between the bandicoots. So is that a bit like a perfect match, the old telly show?
I don't think it's quite like that. They're more permanent wooden slides that are in place that we can actually pop open so that they've got access to each other. It just means that they can still have their own space and they can retreat sort of to their own area, but they can certainly pop in and out of each other's pen.
A lot of animals have this brutal breeding process. You know, sharks are quite vicious with each other and so on. Are bandicoots relatively sweet to each other?
I don't know how sweet they are in terms of courtship. Not too sure on that one, but they do tend to breed fairly well. Basically, these guys, I said they have a short gestation of 12 and a half days, which, as you can imagine, be quite nice, 12 and a half days gestation. But they're actually only ovulate one night in every 3 weeks. So if they don't become pregnant on that night, you've got to wait another 3 weeks to actually for them to actually conceive. So it's not as simple as we like to think. It's not like they can be pumping out babies every 12 and a half days, and they tend to have 2 to 3 pouch young at any one time. So I don't know how sweet they are in terms of their interaction, or whether it's more business for them.
And so how do you know when a bandicoot is ovulating?
We don't. It's all up to the males. They'll know from the scent and the pheromones when the female is basically ready to receive.
So the 25 years we've been doing it, we must be up to the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren of the original bandicoots.
Yeah, definitely. The zoo's breeding process has been substantial, and there's been releases and it's been ongoing. So for now, to be able to let the zoo know that we've got a safe and secure site, they can continue to do their development work, get that genetic diversity happening, and have somewhere that they can safely release the animal means only good things for the future. So we're aiming to hopefully have between 300 and 400 animals calling this place home in about a year's time.
And how many are there here now?
We'd like to think there's probably around 90, but it's hard to get a gauge. We've released 47 over the last year, and most of it in the later half of last year. So to put another 4 in doesn't sound like much, but when you've only got about 400 or 500 animals, every single one counts. So tonight's very exciting.
So you've released 47, but you think there might be 90. Does that mean the ones that are in here have bred?
Oh, for sure. We just did some trapping over the last 3 days. We caught 11 girls, 10 of them were pregnant. We got 27 pouch young ready to come out in various sizes and shapes. Some are just about ready to let their young go. Others are still in the very early stages. But yeah, prolific breeding once again. Winter is a favourite time for breeding for bandicoots just because of the food availability.
What do they eat?
Well, they are an omnivore, so you wouldn't leave your lunch out there. But no, their preferred food is insect-based, so they're after anything, grubs, millipedes, worms, whatever they can get their little paws onto. They'll surface feed in summer when the ground's a bit harder, but they do like to scratch away. So they are a bit of an environmental engineer, so they do dig the soil. So it is beneficial also for plants' health and everything as well.
Do they worry about the aeroplanes overhead here?
I'd like to say so, just so I could try and get some, you know, interest from everybody just to come and have a look. But no, the noise doesn't really bother them one single bit. All the wildlife here gets used to it very quickly. So, yeah, they're not affected.
And how do you choose which ones get released into the wild?
It's fairly dependent on their age and also their genetic status. So what we do is we try and maintain a really good varied genetic pool in the zoo as much as we can so that we can actually match those guys together for breeding and we have the best results. Basically, the ones that are closely related to the animals that we have in captivity are the ones that tend to be released because there's obviously a more varied genetic pool out here and they can kind of breed as they go. The other factor, I suppose, is in their age. So we like to release young bandicoots, as you can imagine, they've got their whole breeding life ahead of them. But also as they're sort of getting on and they may be perhaps coming towards the end of their breeding life, we like to release those animals as well. So look, about 4 is what you're looking at for bandicoots in terms of a breeding life. They can live up to 5, but that's a pretty geriatric bandicoot at 5 years old.
And do you name your bandicoots?
We do. We actually name our bandicoots after Victorian towns.
And what are the names of the ones that are being released tonight?
Unfortunately, one of our females doesn't actually have a name, which is she's about 9 months old, but the other is Dunkeld. So her great-great-grandmother was actually released at this site. So they're now in their third generation. It's nice that she gets to be released here as well.
And do you feel a little touch of maternal pride when you see your babies run off into the bush?
Absolutely. It's hard not to be excited that they get this opportunity to get out there and breed. It would be even more exciting if we could release them into the real wild, but unfortunately at the moment we're just maintaining the population, which is also pretty important, in these predator-proof sanctuaries. So still a very proud moment.
So, how was it releasing an eastern barred bandicoot into the wild?
Well, for me, it was awesome. I hope it was for everyone else. Yeah.
What did it feel like? What did you feel like when you saw it run away?
I felt happy. That's what I felt like. Stay with
him. Bye. Bye, little bandicoot. That's Harry Elwood, who was lucky enough to glimpse a bandicoot as it hopped away into the tussocks, and before him, Phoebe Allen from Werribee Open Plains Zoo and Travis Chitano from Conservation Volunteers. If you head over to the Off-Track website, I've put some links there that will supply you with the information you need on the eastern barred bandicoot, including a link to a recent Bush Telegraph story about the potential to use Marimas, those gentle shepherding dogs, to guard bandicoot populations in Victoria. Find us at abc.net.au/rn and scroll through the program menu to find this program. It's called Off-Track.